90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You are listening to Next Step Forward, which is a program that highlights millennials in the KC Metro that are using their talents, businesses, and activism to promote positively throughout the community. I am here with two special guests, Mr. D. Rashawn Gilmore.
Hey.
And Mr. Xavier Bruton. D. Rashawn, he is no stranger to the show, no stranger to the station. He is the host of Unbossed and Unbothered that comes on Saturdays at 5 p.m. He is also the CEO of Blackout KC. He is also the host of Flatland, man of many jobs, many titles.
I love how important you make me sound, Jasmine. Thank you so much. I'm impressed myself.
And Mr. Xavier, he is an advertising consultant, and he's also the national ballroom leader and promoter. So, Xavier, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, to get started, Blackout KC, and if you are unfamiliar with the organization, Blackout KC mission is to bring about a community where Black queer people in the greater KC metro area are connected and supported, and they have access to safe places and sufficient resources to help them thrive.
Thank you.
Of course. So I interviewed Rashawn back in,
It was your inaugural show.
Yes, and how interesting that you were on my first show of the year, and now you're on my last show of the year.
I'm the alpha and the omega of the Next Step Forward.
Okay, I'll take it. But I know that you all have a ball coming up, the Fire and Ice Ball, that also is commemorating the World AIDS Day, yes?
Yep.
So can you tell me about, first of all, how did you come up with the title of Fire and Ice? What was the concept behind the ball?
Well, that is definitely going to be a joint answer from myself and from Xavier. But first of all, can I just say, Jasmine, that I think you do a stellar job hosting this program.
Aww.
And so I'm honored.
Thank you. I don't know
that I qualify as a millennial. I may be like millennial adjacent because I'm perpetually 30, right?
Yes.
But the Fire and Ice, let me go back a step. The interesting thing about balls, and if you're listening, you're like, oh, a ball like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast. No, this is not that kind of a ball. This is an underground scene that has really become very mainstream. So if you've seen the shows Pose on FX or Legendary on HBO Max, or maybe you've seen the documentary that came out in the late 80s, early 90s called Paris is Burning. And you have some context for it. And I'll let Xavier, the real expert here, talk about that. But the good thing about a ball is that you can pretty much create any theme that you want and bring energy to it. So Fire and Ice is us really doing something that isn't really done in ballroom. And there are balls thrown all over the world. There are houses that support those balls all over the world. But rarely do you have categories that people are walking in these competitive sort of runway shows where you have two people from two different houses who are coming together to, you know, to win a prize. And so Fire and Ice is that.
Okay, Xavier, can you kind of explain to me two things? One, what is the process of like creating a ball, right? Because I know, as Rashawn said, there's performances, there's catwalks, there's all of these different moving pieces. So can you kind of tell me the process in creating such a thing like a ball?
Absolutely. So once you have your theme down, there's six, maybe seven basic categories, and they're kind of split between various audiences. You have your face category, your performance, which is Vogue performance, runway, fashion, which would be best dressed or streetwear, glitz and glam, and then you have like sex, siren, and body.
So explain that for you. You have to break it down for people.
I was just about to say that. So so let's go back a little bit. So face, is that just who has the best makeup, who looks the prettiest? Like, how do you determine face?
Face is about five elements.
Okay.
Nose, skin, teeth, structure, and eyes.
And they come together to fit and eyes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And they come together to fit a mold that we in ballroom call face.
So if you have like a big nose, that's not really... So is this where the term serving face came
from? That is absolutely right.
That's exactly where it came from.
Okay. That makes more sense. And I know we talked about last time you were here, all of the terminology that comes from the LGBTQ community.
That people don't even know. You hear it on mainstream news all the time. Like, if I hear one more reporter say Shay, yes. I mean, that comes from ballroom.
Ah, okay. So you have the face category, you have the like the catwalk. So what is it different from the traditional catwalk that you see on like Fashion Week? Is it a little more like oomph to it, or how do you win that?
They're broken down. So you have European runway, which is, you know, a little more oomph. They want a little more sway. They want over the top effects.
Okay.
And it is embracing your femininity in that runway as well.
Okay.
All American runways, a little more straight leg, more masculine kind of walk. But while we're talking about femininity and masculinity, it's not geared towards that. So you can be a woman and walk all American one way. You can be a male and walk European, or a male and go in drag and walk female figure.
So how does that work though? Like, so if you are a male and you're walking female figure, does a female then judge that, or is it other males judging that, or how does that piece work?
We have a judges panel that is usually 5 to 7 judges.
Okay.
And they're people who have been walking balls for a few years, a series of years, and they're also leaders in the community. So we're not only judging them on their talent and their effect and their walk, but we're also teaching them. We're also the people that have taught them how to walk on the runway as well.
I see. Okay. So what are the other we've gotten face, we have catwalk.
Yep, that was runway.
Runway. And then what other?
Performance. Performance. Which is basically Vogue performance.
So, go ahead.
Can I please jump here just to give a little bit of history? So I think a lot of people who are listening may be familiar with voguing.
From like Madonna.
And they think of Madonna. Yes, exactly.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
However, I won't say it's been acculturated by Madonna, because she always gave credit to where she got it from.
Yes.
Sometimes she gave credit, as I'm being corrected live time. But okay, so I'll try to do this justice, Xavier. You can jump in and correct me where I'm wrong. So basically, what happened was ballroom came about because there were black queer and Latinx queer folk in New York, in particular, who they would do drag shows and they would be competing with the white queens, and they could be better in terms of look or performance or whatever, and they would just never win. So they started having their own. Absolutely. That's why I need to make that connection. And so what would happen is they were like, you know, we just won't do those drag shows. We'll have our own stuff. But it would be late at night because some of the girls were sex workers, needed to be out the stroll. Okay. The venues would be empty or free or cheaper to use at those hours. And so they would have these balls that would go all night, and they created their own category. So if we couldn't get, it's the thing that all minority groups, and especially black people in this country, do. If we cannot find space for ourselves, we'll will create space for ourselves. But the full circle of that is that then people come back and try to acculturate it again. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Colonize the culture.
Absolutely. Okay. And so the event he's talking about actually happened in 1967. A black trans woman named Crystal LaBeija, who was the founding queen of ballroom, she resisted racism at a drag pageant and walked off. And you actually YouTube that video. I think it's
it is. Yeah.
And she resisted racism, and there's a read that goes around the world, and they hear about it. And a few queens contact her, and the next year they begin to organize a ball. And that's where the current house ballroom community separates from pageant community.
And it should be, we should also stipulate that the reason why it's called Ball of Ballroom is because they would rent out ballrooms. Exactly. That's literally where it came from.
Okay, and so when you say pageant, it's not the typical pageant that you would think. Miss USA came on Monday. So, like, you know, when you think of pageant, is it different than what you, the Miss America is Miss USA? Is it kind of the same?
It's very much that.
Actually, that's exactly what pageants were way back then as well.
Oh.
They were just back then called drag balls before they were called pageants.
Gotcha.
And this was like the separation of modern day pageantry from modern day ballroom, house ballroom community.
Okay. So let's go back to the categories. There's so much to learn.
Yeah, there's many layers.
Okay. So we've talked about face, we've talked about runway, we've talked about I feel like I'm missing
one. We touched a little bit on Vogue.
We touched a little bit on Vogue. So can you kind of go a little deeper into Vogue? Like, we talked about Madonna giving a little more light to it, but I'm sure there's way more to it than what Madonna had displayed. So can you...
Absolutely. Voguing is one of those things that started early on in ballroom, 1970-71, by two different black and brown trans women. And it actually started from them doing poses across there. They're actually locked up in jail, and they were across from each other. And it started from them competing with each other, doing poses in jail.
Oh, okay.
They got out of jail, and there was a festival going on in the Bronx after a member was killed, a gang member was killed, and they had a freedom festival. Voguing took to the streets then, and then went down to Manhattan, where at the pier, which is where a lot of black and brown homeless kids lived.
Down on Christopher Street in New York.
Christopher Street leading all the way to the pier, and voguing went from there to ballroom.
Okay, so the voguing that you saw, like in the Madonna video, is that pretty
that
similar?
That was how it was done back then. It was called Old Way.
You got to say the name. You got to give them the name. The father of, the godfather, I should say, maybe, of Vogue.
Willie Ninja was one of in the video, along with Jose Extravaganza. There were actually three or four ballroom people in her video.
Okay.
And so people thought that Madonna founded Vogue. No, Madonna came to ballroom to bring Vogue to the spotlight.
So is that something that you, everybody in the LGBT community or the ballroom community, is that okay to say, like, the ballroom community?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So is that something that you all still deal with, the appropriation? Like, we curated this.
Absolutely.
And then you have Madonna come and make a song.
Absolutely.
And y'all are like, oh, Madonna.
Okay, so, jazz, forgive me. I just have to say that, so there are two things that come to mind for me. As black people, you know, on my show, I'm always talking about, like, okay, white friends, let me tell y'all some stuff y'all probably don't know about the school, y'all. We have this expression called everything but the struggle. Like, people want to bite off of our culture and replicate it and be a part of it and so on and so forth, but don't want the struggle that comes along with being black. That's really a part of what has given way to this creativity. On the other side of it is that ballroom has become very mainstream, because when you have Ryan Murphy, who is a very popular director, I mean, he gave us American Horror Story, he gave us Glee. And so for him to go to FX and say, hey, I want to do, or I've got some folks who want to do a show about ballroom, which is the TV show Pose, it's become very mainstream. And so I would be curious, and I don't want to get my hand slapped by the hostess.
No,
here, but
you're fine.
I'm just curious, Xavier, do you feel like ballroom has, I don't know, that other people, it's opened up, it's become a little bit, quite a bit more mainstream. Do you feel like it's lost anything as a result of that?
Very good question. And this is debated amongst the community all the time. Yeah. We all say that it's been a blessing and a curse. A blessing that ballroom has grown, it's international, we have balls in places. I mean, this is Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, 10, 20 years ago, no one had thought anyone in Kansas City knew what a ball was, let alone they've been having their own. But from Paris is Burning to Pose to now Legendary, opening up that space also has lost a lot of its authenticity. And you get things like, I love the show on Legendary, it's on HBO, thank you for picking it up and showing some spotlight, but a ballroom person created a pitch for a show. The show was turned down, and 6 months later, HBO has Legendary. That's the second time this has happened. If you think about, what was that show, America's Best Dance Crew?
Yes.
So before that show, producers came to ballroom people about doing a show about ballroom. They thought it was too underground, too sex, drugs, and rock and roll, too black. And so
too black.
Exactly. And so next thing we know, America's Best Dance Crew came out as a show, and ballroom was allowed to put one team on the show. And that was where Vogue Evolution came from. So it's been a blessing as more and more people come into ballroom, find out about ballroom, the spread of ballroom globally, but we lose that authenticity and we lose a lot of our own control.
How would you suggest to keep that authenticity? Is that one of those things where before, like, okay, we're just going to have to continue to create our own? Or how do you think, is it just... you go in there forcefully to these producers, like, y'all are taking away the authenticity of this art. Like, what do you think would help kind of shift that?
I think both of actually what you just said. A lot of times it's us continuing to try to do our own, which is one of the reasons why I support Rashawn and Blackout, because it is for us by us. We have had a history in the last 20 years or so of various agencies around the country, public health agencies coming to us to want to do ballroom for their agencies. But it's oftentimes for them to get their numbers.
Absolutely.
And then after the ball, the community hasn't, right, we don't hear from them, or who are you? Until the next time they need numbers or get a new grant.
Rashawn, you was about to say something.
Really, to that very point, and it's very frustrating because for us, for Blackout, for the time that goes into playing these balls, the money that goes into playing these balls, and the way that we try to interweave in them public health, like access to the vaccines for COVID, HIV and STI testing, access to PrEP, which is a once-a-day pill that prevents contraction of HIV, you know, it's important, but we're not doing it for those reasons. I tell our team all the time at Blackout that our number one service is community.
Right.
Providing, creating, curating community for a community of people who don't have, I mean, we're in Midtown Kansas City right now, and we could literally walk to six different ostensibly gay LGBT bars or clubs that are, you know, like I said, ostensibly open to all. We could walk to all of them without losing our breath. There's two down the street here, three up there. But they don't exactly feel very welcoming for our community a lot of times. Doesn't mean you won't see some of us there, because sometimes that's the only option or alternative. But when we can create space for ourselves, and I think that ballroom does that, I just try to always encourage people, Jasmine, that when you come into anybody else's culture, that you respect the space. You respect the story. And too often people don't do that. And unfortunately, very many of my white friends don't think of themselves as having a culture in that way, because things are just, that's just the way it is. It's like a fish doesn't see water. I mean, it's just, it's just, that's everything just around it. This is what it is. And so coming into the space is important, because you can observe, you can enjoy, you can participate, but you must respect it. And part of respecting it is not trying to overdo it in terms of trying to assimilate into it. So I'll stop with that before I go too far. You accuse me of being a new Malcolm X, Malcolm Y.
And I do think there's a fine line of like appreciation and appropriation. You know what I mean? Yes. Like saying, oh, well, this is really cool, I want to be involved. And then taking it on yourself. And it's like, that gets, because like you said, Xavier, you want people to be involved, you like the exposure, like, hey, people are knowing about this, they're seemingly accepting, but then it's also like, okay, now you're just taking it over.
Exactly.
And you're not even like asking out our opinions or how we feel.
Dealt with that. And we've dealt with that. We actually just earlier this year had a major ball shut down in San Francisco. There was an, I don't even know if he was an agency, it was just a guy in San Francisco, got a bunch of money together and decided to throw a ball. And it came to people, but no one in ballroom in the community was involved. Not one leader. We didn't know about it. It started passing around on Facebook, and we were all like, who is this guy? Who is this? He's got the categories. This is wrong. That's wrong. This is not right. And if you're going to do it, I mean, bring us into it. It's not that you can't throw a ball, but bring the community into it.
Well, if you approach it as this entertainment versus what I was talking about earlier, creating community, creating, and it's a history and a heritage really born of struggle and born of a lack of acceptance that we've had to create these spaces, and you come into it just because you think it looks cute or it's fun. That's just not what's up.
But isn't that, without getting too much on the Black Power soapbox, but isn't that something that we as a people have had to deal with since the beginning of time? You know, something that we've created out of struggle for ourselves, and we're like, okay, this is ours, for us, by us. And then somebody else is like, ooh, that's cool, I like that, I'm gonna take it. Or always being looked at as entertainers instead of like people.
I had that backlash at our last ball.
What happened?
Because the ball, so here's the thing about balls, I don't care what it says on a flyer, most times, not all, they don't start on time.
Okay.
And sometimes a ball, right? It'll say 9 p.m. It might not start till midnight, 1 o'clock. And it's not because Black people are fashionably late. It was because historically, we are. Yes, we definitely are. We love the grand and trance. But it was historically because we would wait and start a ball until after we knew our trans sisters mm-hmm. were there safe. Mm. There's been plenty of balls over the years where people were attacked, murdered on their way to and from balls.
Okay.
I mean, Kansas City, you drive, but in, like New York and D.C. where it started, you're getting a cab, on the subway.
Yeah.
Certain neighborhoods, they weren't safe for you to walk through. So the ball didn't start till we noticed and looked around and say, okay,
everybody's here. Yeah.
Everybody's okay. here. And one of the comments I got after the last ball in 2019 was, well, we were there and this didn't start on time. And then if you're going to do a show, and I had to reply and I had to catch myself. So I was mm-hmm. like, this is not a show. This is not a circus. We're not putting on a show for you. We're not entertainment. This is our culture.
I mean, could you imagine walking into somebody's home, they invite you over for dinner, you throw a fit because dinner's not served on time. You're not at a restaurant where you have a reservation. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like you don't put forth the effort to put forth a professional event and that kind of thing. But I think people's impressions of what it's supposed to be. And I remember that. It wasn't Blackouts Ball, but we brought in, thanks to you, Dominique Jackson, who's one of the lead actresses on the TV show Pose.
Okay.
And she came in and... Black trans woman, gorgeous and brilliant, and she's an author. Mm-hmm. And she came in and did the show, did our Blackout Empowerment Summit, and then she judged the ball that night, which is a big deal for our community to have just her here, but then also to be a judge. And I know that there were those people who felt like, oh well, it didn't start right on time.
So what you're saying is I should not show up at 8.
No, you should be there because this ball is going to start on time.
That
Blackouts balls.
We have started on time.
Okay, gotcha. So I do, before we go to break, I want to talk about some of the terms that I've seen in regards to this ball and I guess ball culture in general. So the word legendary, I know there's a show, but I saw that there was like legendary so-and-so, legendary this person. Can you explain like the history behind the word and like why people are called that and what it means?
In ballroom, in the beginning, everybody was just kind of on the same level. Throughout and around that time when Paris is Burning has come out in the 80s, we started having hierarchies per se. Eric Christian Bazaar, one of the main commentators of ballroom at that time, started having what we call LSS, Legends, Statements, and Stars.
Okay.
And it's basically, when you first start out in ballroom, you're a baby.
Okay.
You know, after a few, 2 or 3 years of you mastering your category, you become a little known, you become a star. After 5 to 7 years, a statement. And 10 plus years of you mastering your category, pretty much nationally known, you're a leader, promoter, you're deemed legendary.
Okay. So, do women do ballroom as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because I've only ever seen men do it. And so I was just curious, like, do women also do ballroom?
Women have done ballroom from day one.
Day one.
Okay.
I can give you women like Amber Rose. Amber Rose used to walk in the house of Mizrahi.
I did not know
She actually got her signature blonde cut from a black trans woman in Chicago named Tanya Prada. She went to his...
Come on, history.
She went right to his designer and got their haircut and then hit the red carpet and...
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I did not know Miss Amber
what's
Rose.
What's the designer from Sex and the City? I forget her name.
Who's Sarah Jessica Parker?
the designer.
Oh, the designer. I just think about her designs.
Designer. Patricia Fields.
Oh, yeah. Pat Fields. Yeah.
Patricia Fields walked into a ball with a couple of models one day and founded the House of Fields. And the House of Fields closed, and that's where Willie Ninja started the House of Ninja. He was in her house.
Okay. So speaking of houses, explain that to me. What does that mean exactly?
Houses, when it ballroom started, were organized by one or two people they had a couple kids, young people in the community that they were growing and mentoring, and you bring them into your house. You want them to walk a category under you, but outside of ballroom, you're still a mentor and a guide to them.
Okay.
So your group of kids is are the kids, and then there's a mother and a father, which are the other parents of the house.
So the house is just basically like a... sub-organization, sort of, or...
In a way, yes. Okay. Some houses are now nonprofits. Absolutely.
Okay.
They become organizations now.
And I will try to butcher this, Xavier, so maybe you can correct me if I get it wrong, but basically what would happen is because you wanted to be on that stage and you wanted to, or on that runway, and you wanted to be wearing Balmain or Gucci or Prada or what have you. And so they took the house names from these designer names. So You might throw something. I said a few of them, but there's all kinds.
Oh, yeah. From Balenciaga, Chanel. The first houses were Chanel, Ebony. There's Aphrodite, Balenciaga, Balmain. Name a designer, there's probably a house out there.
Marc Jacobs now.
There is a house of Marc Jacobs, an official. Okay. And he actually officially... What do you call that?
Endorsed his house.
Okay. Yeah.
So these designers, these top line designers, they would actually endorse these ballroom houses?
Some, yeah.
Okay.
Because I will tell you, the House of Karan, we call it the House of Karan. Originally, it was the House of Donna Karan. And Donna Karan sued us.
Oh.
She sued ballroom
Girl.
For use of her name. So they renamed the House of Karan.
Which I find interesting because I would think that the more people wearing your stuff,
exactly,
the exposure. Better. Listen, I'm not a designer.
It depends on the designer though, because Isaac Mizrahi loves that there's a House of Mizrahi after him. Mm-hmm. Again, Marc Jacobs just founded his house under his name, and that's directly under him. But then you have some who, like Chanel Cosmetics, they sued us.
Wow.
So in ballroom, it's not the House of Chanel. They had to add Chanel International after it so that they don't get sued.
Gotcha. Okay, so a couple more terms here. What is OTA?
OTA means open to all. It means anyone can walk that category. Doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, trans, doesn't matter.
Okay. And so with the OTA team performance, it just means everybody can join a team and do performance, which is Vogue.
Right.
Got it.
Two
Come on, Jess.
I'm learning out here.
You got it.
Okay. So we have OTA running with OVAH entrance. What is that?
OVA.
With the OVA entrance.
Like over the top. Okay. It's got to be extra.
So I read that as OVA, but I was like, but it's all capitalized, so maybe that is like acronym, mean something. Okay, so I was right. Over the top. Mm-hmm. Now, what would be like an over the top entrance? Like confetti, or what would be over the top?
Baby, I've seen things.
I was gonna say, this is ballroom. It can be anything. I've seen people come from a balcony, start voguing, and drop from the balcony onto a table and do a dip.
Oh.
That's an OVA entrance, okay?
Okay.
We've had Andre Mizrahi drove a car into a ball one time. We've had people come in on horseback. It's an OVA entrance. Like, sweetie, I have arrived. That's what it's saying. Like, I have arrived. All y'all might be here,
but I
have just arrived. That's what it's saying.
Gotcha. Okay. I like the OVA entrance. Now I'm like, what can I do for an OVA? Do I need to rent a horse?
Well, you come in with sparklers. That'll be enough since you're not walking.
That's true. That is very true. Okay, so what does MF realness mean?
MF is male figure.
Okay.
So in ballroom, gay men are called butch queens.
Yes.
And as the categories have morphed, we now allow trans men to compete in butch queen categories.
Okay.
So we've changed it to male figure. Also because we're now living in this age where GNC and non-conforming is coming in. So it's male figure, just how you present yourself in that moment.
Sometimes it's the other thing MF stands for, but never mind.
Yeah.
Public radio.
Yeah. At first I thought that too, and I was like, well, maybe not.
I never even thought about that.
An FQ realness?
Femme queen. Is the ballroom term for transgendered women.
Okay.
Femme queen and butch queen for men and women.
Yeah. Gotcha. So could a femme queen also be like a cis woman?
No.
She would walk like female figure or something. Right. Like, yeah.
So if it's female figure, it would be femme queens or trans women versus women. It might even be drag queens. You know, anybody that identifies as a female figure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, on that note, we might have to take a break. I have learned so much. You are listening to Next Step Forward. We are going to take a break. We will be right back. Stay with us. 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You are listening to Next Step Forward. I am your host, Jasmine Jones. Next Step Forward is a program that is highlighting millennials in KC Metro that are using their talents, businesses, and activism to promote positivity throughout the community. I have been speaking with D. Rashawn Gilmore, who is the host of Unbossed and Unbothered. He is also the CEO of Blackout KC. He is also the host of Flatland on Kansas City PBS. And my other special guest is Xavier Bruton. He is the national ballroom leader and promoter. He's also an advertising consultant. We have been talking about all things ballroom. It's been extremely informative. I've learned so much. So, in continuation about ballroom culture, I want to kind of shift to the business side of things, because I know putting on these balls are probably a ton of work and probably very hectic. So with the ball coming up on Saturday, can you all kind of tell me the behind the scenes and not so Instagram worthy processes of putting on something like this?
So first thing is, have a good therapist on standby. Xavier can attest to this. Every ball that I have done, maybe, except for the very first ones before Blackout was even started and I was running Project I Am out of Casey Care, Xavier's been pretty much with all those balls and helping plan and execute those, along with Gigi Chanel. I should mention her as well. But I think every time we have a ball, I swear and say, I'm not doing any more balls. It's just, I'm not doing, here I am again. But I think,
me too.
When you, right, you too. I think the reality of it is that it is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And ballroom, unlike just planning any event, there's all the same things you have to deal with, of budget and planning, logistics and all of that, guest lists and promotions, all those things that go into it. But because of the nature of ballroom, there are a lot of there's a lot of pomp and circumstance and ceremony that goes into it.
Okay.
And you have to be knowledgeable of that, because you can err and really offend people who have maybe been, they're a legend. Mm-hmm. And you don't give them their just due. If there were an ambassador coming to speak, you know, the French ambassador comes to speak at your event here in Kansas City, well, you wouldn't call him, you know, John Smith or, you know, Michel LeBlanc or whatever. You
right.
The ambassador, you know, so mm-hmm. all of that is important. So those things do tend to tire me out a little bit.
Okay.
But I have to say, as exhausting as planning and executing a ball can be, mm-hmm. it is probably one of the most rewarding experiences that I have in my work. I can't believe I said that on live radio. Mm-hmm. I'm bring it back and put it in my face, but it's true.
So, what about you, Xavier?
I was going to say, I actually agree 100%. I'm very much, every ballroom event, it's, okay, this is my last one. I'm taking 2-3 years off. Don't call me. I'm shutting my Facebook down. But then at the event, the energy, yeah. the love in the room, it just makes you like, oh, it was all worth it.
Yeah, even though
when's the next ball?
Yeah, even though it's fiercely competitive.
It is.
It is a competitive sport by all means.
It is very competitive.
Fiercely competitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fiercely.
So how do you sign up for the competitions? Is it beforehand, or you just go and say, I'm going to compete in face? Mm-hmm. Or runway.
Mm-hmm. You decide what you want to do. If you're coming by yourself or you're coming with your house members, and then when the category is called, you hit that runway.
Now, what if you're not very good?
You will get what's called a chop.
Right. Okay.
And any one of the judges can chop you. So that it's just like chop, like you're not bringing what that category is.
Yeah.
Maybe you're in the wrong category. Maybe you don't have enough of what's called for in that category, and
right.
they will chop you. You're done. You don't even walk the whole runway.
So somebody comes up to get you, like, no, sweetie.
No. So in like pageants, you think of the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 mm-hmm. as a score. In ballroom, you get tens
mm-hmm.
so that you can chopped. Compete, or you get chopped. And a chop means a judge is saying, you're not ready. I don't see it for you yet.
Gotcha.
Or like he said, it could be it's not your category. You might be out there for the wrong category and not know it yet. You know what I mean?
And there are politics, because we've had to put in place for Saturday's ball. Xavier asked me in one of our planning meetings, he said, okay, Rashawn, so if the judges don't agree, who's making the final decision about who's going to override that or whatever? So we're not going to say on air who that is, but yeah,
because it's politics, because we don't have a lot of just written down rules, you know.
Gotcha.
So it's a lot of it is based on
what
the judges see for themselves.
Gotcha. Okay, so picking the venue.
Mm.
What is the criteria for?
That is a great question, Jasmine, because I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm an eager
guest. It's okay.
She's never going to invite me back. But we were just having this conversation at the office before we came out. And so I think it depends. Maybe we can talk about what you were saying when it's more just individual side, and I can talk about from the agency side.
Historically, venues have been the smallest underground places we can find that were willing to rent to us. Being Black LGBTQ, the first thing they'd be like, oh, what are you gonna trying to do? No, we can't. I'm sorry, we don't have space for that. Originally in the early 70s and 80s, we were having balls in the basement of churches. Sometimes balls were usually on Sundays at 3, 4, 5 in the morning because that's when it was safe, and that's the space that allowed.
Gotcha.
So nowadays,
they ain't gotta get up and go to work in the morning, or?
Well, back then we didn't have
some
jobs.
Of them that was right.
Right. Remember this? In that era, you have to remember a good majority were the homeless population.
Right. Okay, gotcha.
I would say from the agency side of it, and part of it has to just do, frankly, with me as an individual and just sort of my vision around what space Blackout occupies and what we're trying to accomplish. So whenever we've done balls, I've always tried to do them in spaces that sort of elevated the profile of the event, but also gave community members something different to experience. And so we've done the Uptown Theater, we've done Vox Theater, we've done clubs, we've done, this Saturday the ball is going to be at the Little Theater, which is really dope because it's going to be right downtown. And it's a beautiful Art Deco building that's been there forever. This is part of the municipal auditorium complex. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But it is expensive. And so if you're an individual putting on a ball or an individual house, you know, I won't put the numbers out there now because some of my board members are listening to what we spent on this ball. Thank you, underwriters and sponsors and supporters. But it can get really, really pricey. And I'll just tell you right now because it's public knowledge, but just getting the Little Theater is $3,500.
Oh.
And then on top of that, you have to use their caterers. And then on top of that, you have to use their crowd control people. So those costs really do mount significantly and quickly.
Absolutely.
So the funding, does that come from just
flat backing? I do a lot of flat backing on behalf of the community. I'm just kidding.
I was like, no, oh, wait a minute now.
That just took a turn left.
I was like, wait, hold on.
You're gonna yank me off this radio station. The day is coming.
So do you go to local community or just the local businesses, say, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Do you want to be a part of it? Or how does that work?
Yes
out?
And no. And I should say that Blackout, and kudos to our team and kudos to our board and to our funders, Blackout really approaches this very differently. And so some of it is that we have raised money from various sponsors who've decided to, and these are people that we do business with in a lot of cases, or they're other funders who support other programming of Blackout. However, we have made it a part of our, just it's a priority for us that we set aside money in our operational budget to make sure that we can put on this event. Because at this event, the last time we did the Blackout Ball, which is a few years ago, several years ago, we tested 100 people. I can tell you right now, there's never been an event in Kansas City, and I've been in this field for 8 years, where we've been able to rapid HIV testing, 100 people on site. And if you're a person living with HIV, there's still space for you because we offer STI testing.
Okay.
So at the ball on Saturday, we have gone to our funders and said, hey, if you will help underwrite the cost of this ball, what we will do is we will incentivize people to take an HIV or an STI test on site at the ball, which we will be doing. And then the incentive for them is a free entry into the ball. And tickets are otherwise $35 for general admission and $50 for VIP.
Gotcha. Okay. So I think that's interesting, though, that you're doing having a health incentive. Because I think that's important. So how do you get people to be on board with that instead of just being like, I don't really want to do
it? It's getting harder, I'll be honest with you. There's something that I call HIV fatigue. Because too often what happens for the Black LGBT community, and especially men who have sex with men or same gender loving men and trans people, what often happens is that any funding for us is always flowing from the HIV channel. So if it's not HIV, it's hard to even raise money for things that we need, right? And so people are tired of, I just want to go to the ball, or I just want to go to the event. I don't want to hear about HIV. I don't want to take a test. But I think we've done a good job of helping to normalize HIV testing. And so people aren't quite as weary of it, but it does take a little bit more effort. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Xavier, but
I agree with you, and in addition to that, from a ballroom perspective, it was Albert Latex, who founded the House of Latex and initiated Latex Ball, was the first person to start intersecting public health with ballroom. Mm. And so, as Rashawn said, it was like HIV fatigue. But for a long time, particularly in the height of the HIV crisis, ballroom was ostracized. Agencies didn't want to test us and give us, you know, access to meds and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now it's the flip op, it's the opposite. And a lot of it's directly through the CDC saying, oh, okay, there's a ballroom community here. Let's put some funds there so that we can reach this community.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I think that that's a good idea, though. You know, with the CDC, it could, I don't know, maybe this is just the pessimist in me. There is a bit of like concern of, okay, we're going to give you money or we're going to give you resources. And some people do that with the thought of, okay, now we have control, you know?
Yeah.
Have you guys experienced any of that in planning your ballrooms?
No, I just don't tolerate it. I'm just going to be flat out.
Okay.
If you had pulled out your credit card and you're going to go to Black House website and make a donation, and it's like, yeah, but I'm not that we don't have donor-directed giving. I'm not talking about that. I mean, what you said, that word, that control. And some people do want that. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, I am not Martin Luther Queen. I do not wave my hands and the entire black gay community comes a-flocking. It is an everyday earning and risking of the credibility it takes to lead. And so what I mean by that is we occupy a role that we didn't really ask for as a bit of a gatekeeper in a way, because I don't desire to be that, but I recognize that people will come to us. When people's motives are not in alignment with our work, our values, and our mission, we just don't take their money. And that may be considered nonprofit malpractice, because you need money, don't you? Well, no. And I'll be nice and I won't name names.
Not at any expense.
Not at any expense. And I'll just say this, and this, we're talking about the business side of things. Mm-hmm. So this, like I said, might be a little bit of malpractice, some might say. But we had a funder, a local funder here in Kansas City, that is does charitable giving around HIV/AIDS. Draw your own conclusions, people. And they approached Blackout and said, oh, we want to give Blackout $10,000. And with that $10,000, we went da 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 da. And I said to them, we declined to accept your invitation to apply for that funding. And they just couldn't believe it. Part of it is because they just felt like, oh, you guys are so needy, you should just take this money. Mm. But what I understood was they were trying to put pretty yellow flowers in the front yard. I'm focused on putting food on the table. Mm. I'm focused on making sure we have a solid foundation. I'm focused on making sure that the roof over our head doesn't leak, that there's love in the house. And once we have those things, then we can venture out to the front porch and then we can go out to the yard and invite friends over. But for right now, we're not interested in being tokenized in that way so that you and your buddies
can like feel good about themselves.
Exactly. So
okay.
That $10,000 grant to Blackout, so oh, we did a black gay thing, check that box. Exactly. $10,000 to us is really worth $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 to them, because they're going to continue to raise money and say, look what we're doing, give us all of your money, we'll give it to these little black people over here. Mm-hmm. I ain't having it.
Gotcha. And speaking of having issues with donors or funders or whomever, tell me about, if any, some of the issues that may have arisen in planning either this ball on Saturday or previous balls.
Around funding?
Or either funding or venues or caterers or whatever.
I will. Let's just talk about it, Jasmine. She made me do it. There is sometimes what I like to call or think of as the racism of low expectations.
Mm, explain that.
And so we may reach out and say to a caterer or maybe a local sheriff's department, I don't know, pick one, maybe in Jackson County, I don't know, that just comes to mind. And so they ask questions, not just the sheriff's department, also the crowd systems people that do the ushering at these public venues and stuff. Mm-hmm. What kind of music are you playing? Mm-hmm. What the hell difference does it make? You want to know who the audience is. Mm-hmm. So if I said country, then two ushers or security guards or whatever. Mm-hmm. If I say hip hop, oh, we need 8 to 10 to 12 people, you know, that kind of thing. And so we encounter that a lot. We've encountered that with this ball. And by the way, it's not just white people. There are plenty of black folks who internalize their racism as well. And so one company was white-led, one company was black-led, and we ran into the same issue, even though, like, they asked questions like, do you have insurance? Well, we require $1 million policy. Great, we have a $3 million general liability policy. We've always maintained that among all of our other insurances that we keep for the organization, because we know what the hell we're doing. Mm-hmm. But again, that becomes a barrier. So imagine, I have some business experience. Imagine if you're a community member trying to do something for your community, you're trying to plant a ball, what that's like for you.
Yeah.
Xavier, have any? It's
literal hell. And I've gotten to a point where I use my community to help with crowd control and stuff like that, because it's like, okay, I can't afford to hire 6 and 7 officers.
Well, and we use event marshals because we want a barrier between the police and our people anyway. Let us deal with it first. If we need you, we'll call you in.
Mm-hmm. But doing it out of pocket, sometimes we have to sideline some of that. Even when it comes to venues, there's a lot of venues that just won't work with us. And so we're using those same spaces, and they may not be the best spaces, but it's like, this is what we can use. This is what we can afford.
Right.
When it's just, out of pocket.
So, speaking of music, what kind of music is at a ball?
That's a great question. That's an important... the music is important.
House music. It's soul house.
It's soulful house. Like DC house music, Chicago house music. Like, what kind of house music?
Deep house.
Yeah. It's a deep soulful house. Ballroom house is different from a city or a club house that you go to with various clubs.
Okay,
so in different cities.
It's not more like a dancing type music.
I can give you a little 20-second blip if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. Okay.
So, and that's for... performance.
That's what you evoke to.
So what would you do for like a runway or a face? Same kind of...
For a runway, it would be a different beat. It's a faster beat that you can walk to and have a rhythm to.
Uh-huh.
And for face, usually something that accentuates beauty. A lot of times it's some Beyonce song or one of the big face songs is Diana Ross. What's the name of that? Love's Hangover.
That
was the big face song that they still play.
So I know we're going away from the business for a second, but I have questions.
It's your show.
So when you're serving face, do you still do like a runway or do you stand there and literally just serve face?
It's a little bit of both. So when you're first walking up, you're kind of walking, just hitting the runway, walking down the runway towards the judges.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling your face, or you're walking down that runway.
Like facial
strutting
expressions,
your runway.
Like smizing and all that
and
stuff.
You're presenting your features.
Ah.
Your features that make you a model-esque face. So when you get down to the judges, you aren't just in front of the table and you're kind of in
their
face.
Or sometimes on the table.
Or on the table. Some of them think they're just that sexy. I'm going to lay on the table. Yes, they do it. And you're telling the judges, this is what I got.
I think, could you help a lot of people out here and tell people the difference between body and sex siren?
Body is exactly what it sounds. I'm standing there. I'm flexing my body as if I'm like a bodybuilder.
Like in a bodybuilder competition type thing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Sex siren is more of I'm selling sex. I'm giving you a strip tease or an outfit or something where I'm selling sex.
So the sex siren, do they wear more like provocative type clothes or
sex sirens?
If they want to win.
Yeah, they definitely have the body out. There have been balls, to be honest, there have been balls where they come out nude.
What?
Absolutely.
Nobody ever invites me to those. That will not be happening Saturday night at ball, as far as I know.
Yeah, there's times where they get nude. If the battle gets that hot, there's times they take it all off.
Wow.
It has happened.
Now imagine if you take it all off and you lose.
That has happened.
That's what you have a therapist on standby. So they can coach you.
Has happened too. I've seen
it. Okay. I think this might be the last question, but it's probably not. So back to the planning of the production, right? I don't know if you've answered this already, but the kind of challenges that you have run into, maybe not so much with other people, just like within yourself. Has there been, like, how do you deal with the mental health of the stress of, planning the ball, the people, the naysayers, whatever? Xavier, I'll start with you.
I'll say the healthy version. Therapy,
uh-huh.
A cocktail every now and then, and honestly, just the support. I mean, like what Sean said, ballroom's very, very competitive.
Mm.
But But at the end of the, and there's 50 or 60 houses in Ballroom, but at the end of the day, we all started from the same six or seven houses.
Okay.
We're one family, regardless of what house you're in. I cannot do what I do without my Ballroom mentors and leaders in multiple cities helping me to accomplish, you know, the things we do. So it is a group team and community effort.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also tiring and drama filled too. There's the politics. And so from that, sometimes you just have to detox and step away.
Rashawn?
I have to give credit to Xavier and others who have helped, but mostly Xavier when it comes to playing the balls that we've done. And I just have to shout out our entire team by name at Blackout. So I'm going to do that real quick if I may, in 10 seconds or less.
Mm-hmm.
Ebony Johnson, our colleague here, but also our director of operations, who's phenomenal. John Holder, who is our special assistant to me. And John has been doing so much work pulling all these pieces together. Dr. Anubhav Kadambi, our director of clinical services, and making sure that our testing is set up and having our providers. And by the way, I should mention that we're doing something that's never been done at a ball before, which is that not only will people be able to get an HIV test, but our actual doctors and nurses will be on site. The doctors and nurses that see our clients and patients and members at Blackout will be on site to prescribe PrEP for people if they qualify and have a negative HIV test. So that's great.
Yes,
Kayla Gilmore, who is our patient care coordinator, has been doing a phenomenal job. Abram Hawkins and CJ Pulliam, who have been coordinating all of our testing stuff. Tanya Carson. I mean, we just have a great team. I don't do it alone, so I'm glad to be able to put their names out there because they are really the ones who make it work. And God knows they put up with me. I mean, hazard pay for that.
Well, this has been wonderful.
No, I don't want it to
it's
be
time
over.
To go. Yes. We gotta go. I'm so sorry. We gotta go. Okay. But real quick, for anybody that wants any more information about the ball, where could they find that information?
Just go on event. You could go on Eventbrite or on Facebook and just search Blackout KC. Or if you're on Eventbrite, Fire and Ice Ball. Look under KC Events, but it's really easy to just go there and find us and get your tickets if you're interested because they're going really fast. We have no more tables, no more VIP tables. It's gone.
All right.
And for future Ballroom events, you can always search for Kansas City Ballroom on Facebook. There's a page. We share all of the events and things on there.
Good to know. Well, this has been Next Step Forward. I've been talking to D. Rashawn Gilmore Xavier Bruton. Thank you all both so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for doing this show. I mean, we don't have these platforms to really be talking about this.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
I've learned so much. And to all the listeners, I hope that you have learned a lot as well. Please stay tuned for the local showcase.